All right, see if I can do this without falling down. Okay, and for my first trick, I have to open my screen. Okay, all right, well, good morning, everybody. Now, how many of you are here from the Boston area? Anybody west of the Mississippi? Me too. Is it 6 a.m. in your head?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right, so I got these toothpicks in, but I'm ready. Well, it really is a pleasure and an honor to be able to be speaking to you here today to share a little bit about, you know, how I got to be, I guess, a CISO. But really, I'm going to talk about what I call the uncharted path that you know, I followed through my life. And I promise you, we didn't coordinate any material between Carolyn, Nicole, and myself, but there's going to be a common thread, especially on one slide. So anyway, I am very easy. I'm very casual. Come up to the mic if you want to talk, or just yell out. Just make this a really great time together this morning, okay? All righty. So starting off in, and I'm gonna move this microphone. So sorry, camera person. Otherwise, I'm going to keep staring at that thing. So starting off my career, you know, I really had to go back to, you know, sort of what I called, you know, the very beginning and say, okay, who was I when I sort of popped out of the chute, you know, popped out to mom and dad and said, okay, world, I'm here, I'm ready to go. I'm the oldest of two. You know, I have this ratty little brother, you know, but, he's 6'4" and weighs 250 now, kind of a big guy. But anyway, but I just wanted to say that, you know, I started at the beginning of, you know, sort of popping out, and pretty early on it was decided, oh, I think we got a smart one, you know. Oh, good, because it looks all squished on my screen, okay. All right, so there I am, okay, not really, reading a book, and I knew that, and my parents knew that we had to do something to keep me occupied. You know, I was into creating lots of complexity, lots of things with my toys, and very creative. And you know, good news is they kept me very, very busy. But they had this one thing that they told me all along: you can be whatever you want to be. But they were very non-specific. So I don't know. That's me on the right being Yoda. Okay, all right, not really.
Yoda, Jedi Master.
Now that is a trick, okay?
Yoda, there is no try, do or do not.
Okay, I don't know how I can do that, but I can. Okay, that's really weird. But anyway, so my parents were really non-specific. They were like, okay, be whatever you want to be. And then that was kind of it. That was their support. So, you know, I was off wondering, well, what am I going to be when I grow up? So probably, and this kind of ties to what Carol and Nicole were saying, is as I went through school, seventh grade was a big fork in the road. Because what I'm showing you here is a group of seventh grade boys. And I say it's all been the same ever since then. Because what I always tell people is ever since the seventh grade, when we began to sort of track into different kinds of classes in school, I've been hanging out with these dudes. Have you? They're just the older version of this now, right? Okay. He's the only guy in here right now, so I could say that. All right, so ever since the seventh grade, you know, it's been all boys. So I could really relate to what Carolyn and Nicole were talking about in saying, oh my God, it's a group of women. I'm afraid of you. Ah! Or, what do we talk about? Because I've been hanging out with the guys for so long, I know their language far better than I know our own. Okay, so anyway, so I just wanted to sort of, if any of you had that same experience, that, you know, for me, people say, well, how do you know how to do this? I said, well, it's been the same since seventh grade, so I don't know how to do anything else. Okay, so what happened when I just kept going on with my life, you know? I just call it stuff happens, you know? You kind of finish high school, doing the same old thing with the same old guys. And then you move on to college, and that's supposed to be a bunch of kids in college right there. And then, you know, you're trying to figure out, what am I going to be? So I started off to be a mechanical engineering major, and that was really cool, except there were only two of us in the whole program, two girls. And we hung out together all the time. We did everything together because we were the only two. And we all also are the only ones that got in trouble for talking in class. What surprise was that, right? So we'd sit in the back and we'd go, or, oh, can you believe that guy's over there doing that? Anyway, but we would get trouble talking in the class. And then after a while, I was trying to figure out, is this really what I want to be? You know, this is what all these aptitude tests had told me to do. Math was my favorite thing. Go be a mechanical engineer. I really like how things like work. And so I dove into that. But then I hit a crossroads. About 2.5 years into school, in college, I quit. I quit going to school. And that was the, you know, I'm sure, what was I, 20, 19? That was the hardest decision I'd ever made. And it was absolutely just gut-wrenching to be able to say that, okay, I'm going to quit school, and I'm going to go to work. But, you know, I didn't want to go down to the local, you know, taco stand and work. So, but I really wanted to test out, you know, could I be successful in the engineering field? So I joined a corporation called the Fluor Corporation, which is, if you know them, they're all about engineering construction, petrochemical plants, processing plants all around the world. So, you know, I didn't exactly go to a girl-friendly place either. And while I was there, you know, I learned all kinds of really fun things, and I was totally geeked out. I was just loving it. I began a career as a control systems designer. So pressure, temperature, level, and flow, anything you want to know, okay? That's me. All right, so I began this really geeky profession in control systems design. And if you know what that is, that's all the stuff, all the instrumentation, the plants and things that keep things from blowing up, right? We are also the people that create those great control panels, those great control rooms where you're watching all the screens, you know, even like in the Star Wars movies and things like that. So that was how I spent my time. And that took me, you know, that really derailed me and took me off on a career that I actually spent 9 years doing. So you're probably wondering, well, geez, what happened to school, right? Well, I kept going to school at night and things like that, but then I changed my mind 4 or 5 times. By the time I graduated, I had probably enough units for, I don't know, 3 or 4 different majors, right? Because I had just about tried everything. Because I suddenly thought, you know, I don't really want to be an engineer. And that was one of the dawnings I had at this place, was that I was, sorry, far more creative. Hope I don't offend anybody. Anyway, that's where I was going. So after a total of 9 years after high school is when I finally graduated. So I'm in the sea there, kids. Okay, just kidding. All right, so then I graduated my bachelor's degree, and my bachelor's degree is actually in psychology. What the heck was that all about? Well, as I was wandering in and out of all these different majors, I changed from mechanical engineering to physical therapy to math to computer science and then psychology. Was one day, you know, as I was going through my travels and my studies, I happened to take a class in research methods in psychology. I was hooked. Oh my gosh, research. I was going to be a professional researcher, and so that's what I did. So I got my degree in experimental psychology. But after that, you know, I was still working, and I was wondering, where the heck is my career going? Okay? So I started my working career at 11 with a paper route. How many of you had a paper route? Are there still paper routes? By car. Okay, well, who was on the bike? All right, my girl. All right, so you know, I'm out there in the, you know, early hours of the morning or in the evening, depending on which paper I was doing at that time. You know, I had to go kind of upscale. And so, you know, going from the paper route to, you know, the high school job at McDonald's. Now, I was at McDonald's when you had to write everything down on paper to take the order and add it up yourself. Okay, yeah, my hair is white. Okay. And then I went to, you know, during my college, I was like, oh, you know, I took this job as an office supply buyer. And then I had taken that job as a control systems designer, all in the backdrop of the school stuff going on. And while I was doing control systems design, one of the things I didn't tell you about is that the design work I began doing was actually on computers. That was like the new thing, right? Computer graphics, computer-aided design. And so I quickly volunteered for one of those roles. Because it was like, oh, I'm not going to do the same stuff that everybody else is doing. I'm going to go look in front of the screen. Well, after about 5 or 6 years of working in front of the screen, I was able to, and taking a lot of these classes like computer science and things, I was able to sort of talk my way into a role as a systems analyst, still all at the Fluor Corporation. But I was just kind of floundering, and they were pressuring me, hey, can you finish your degree and that kind of stuff, and what are you really studying? And so I thought, well, now what am I going to do? So then I had this great idea. So after 9 years of working, or so, I quit work, and I went back to school. And I went back to school, and it was like, you know, I just jumped. I just said, okay, I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to really study what I've just majored in, which is psychology, and I'm going to become this great researcher. And so I did that. And so then a couple of years later, you know what the story is, right? So then I graduated. And then I was like, now what? Because what I thought I was going to do was something really fantastic and really, you know, really, you know, just out there, really changing the world. And I had actually focused all of my training and research in quantitative psychology, of course, measurement, evaluation, techniques of experimental research. I was the statistics person. I was the person you came to for tutoring, right? I did all of that stuff. Plus, I also worked in the Social Science Research Center and the Testing and Research Center at the university. I was all about numbers and computers and things like that anyway. So that's what I kept doing. But I will tell you, the real truth is that about a year and a half into this master's degree, I knew this is not what I wanted to do. So what happened? Oh my God. The phone rang one day. And it was a friend of mine from Fluor, and she said, hey, we have a position open. Would you like to come back? And I said, sure, that would be awesome. I didn't even think. Here I'm going full-time to graduate school, and here I'm going to jump like now back into work. Okay, but there was a trick here. So this time, no more of that control systems design stuff. I was just going to be a systems analyst. And yeah, that's what we looked like back then, okay? Computer equipment and the console and the data center and all that. So I said, okay, great, but I'm going to do this full time. So I actually went back to this job, and to tell you the truth, I walked in on the first day, and you know, but this had been a couple of years, I hadn't been there, and they said, okay, do you know where to go? I said, yeah. So I showed up, I come walking into the work area where I had worked before, you know, kind of the same boss. And he said, Leslie, we have trouble with the accounting files. I need you to log in right now. I said, okay, Jim, that'll be great. I'll do it. I haven't been there for 2 years, right? I said, okay, Jim. So I sat down at the VT220. And I said, what's the password? And he told me, and I said, that was it when I left. It was the identical password. Went in, quickly made the change, went back, sat in my cube. Same cube, same desk, same pencils in the drawer, same stuff. Bizarre. And then I began a career then of just focusing totally into computers. I was supporting the computer-aided design system still there, and you know, I was working on a particular platform. So I began this sort of focused career specializing in mini computers. How many people remember mini computers? All right, I am speaking to some people here. Okay. Trying not to be the oldest person in the room, probably am. Anyway, so, oh, I just love the VAX. I love the VMS operating system. I became a systems programmer. I was like able to make these VAXs spin on their little wheels or whatever. Okay. I thought it was awesome. I was absolutely in love. I love my VAX. Or multiple VAXs, also PDPs, all of that fun stuff. And I really felt like I am on to something. I have finally found something that is just got me hooked. So probably a lot of this happened to you, right? Or maybe you were in the middle of all of this decision making. And then I found I couldn't get enough. And it kept getting bigger, and data centers, and you know, network diagrams, and working with individual systems, and architecture, and all kinds of stuff. I just couldn't consume enough stuff about this. It was just like an addiction. I had to go to every class, I had to attend every conference, I had to do everything. I had to work 24 hours a day. It was really great. And along the way, I even found female role models that I could look up to and learn from. Okay, you guys know some of these people? Okay. Anita Borg, a really, really fabulous woman who worked for Digital Equipment Corporation. After she left there, she started the Anita Borg Institute. And then, not too long after that, she actually passed away from cancer. But the Anita Borg Institute still lives. It's headquartered in Palo Alto, California. And I was named an ambassador of the Anita Borg Institute in 2006. I'm very, very proud to serve, to help the Anita Borg Institute. So, anybody a film fan of the 40s? Hedy Lamarr? Did you know that she was also a famous inventor? Yes, during her fabulous movie career as, what did she play, like Cleopatra and all of these very, very sexy roles, she was also an inventor of spread spectrum technology. I could say that fine last night, I don't know why I can't say it this morning. And then there's our dear friend, Grace Marie Hopper. You guys know her? Okay, what did she invent? COBOL, that's right. She invented the COBOL language. And she worked on which computer, do you guys know? The ENIAC, okay. And she's also credited with a couple of other things. She's also credited with coming up with the word bug. Now, why is that? Because one day, when they were working on the dear old ENIAC or some other version of it, something wasn't going right. And it kept going wrong and wrong and wrong. And so finally, they kind of like, I don't think they turned it off because it would have taken 3 days to turn it back on, right? They finally opened up the doors and there was a bug. Like a bug inside. It says, we have a bug. And that's stuck ever since. She's also credited with, what's that famous phrase? You know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. She's the one that also started that one. She had her own version of it, but that's where she started. But there's this lovely photo of her as a rear admiral in the Navy, as she was when she retired from the Navy. But I really don't like this photo of her. Why don't we remember her as the beautiful young scientist that she was? Right? She was awesome. She was married before World War II. She had no children, but her husband was killed in World War II. And she stayed unmarried for the rest of her career. Okay, so here I am, you know, drowning in all this computer science, all of this great stuff, you know, going into the data center, working on the console, you know, doing the tapes, doing this, doing that. But then I found something was missing. So I should put on here, this slide intentionally left blank, right? Okay? Something was missing. It was just kind of blank for me. Because I had moved through a career that had, you know, all kinds of different fun things. And, you know, I was thinking, well, I'm kind of smart around here. So I figured that the next step I needed to take was I needed to be in charge. I needed to be the leader. I needed to be the manager. I knew how things should work. I was tired of like listening to other people's ideas, and I wanted to be in the lead. So what did I do? You've already seen a pattern. Can you predict the next slide? I went back to school. Except these are different kids, right? Now we're all MBA students, right? But this time I was smarter. I kept my job. Okay, ruined my marriage, but that's okay. You know, get an MBA, get a divorce all in the same week, you know, that kind of thing. That's a true story. Okay. But anyway, I went off, became this fabulous MBA student, met some great people, worked on great projects, learned all kinds of things that I didn't know anything about. And in fact, before I could actually get into the MBA program, I needed to take remedial classes. Why did I need, I'm smart. I know everything. Why do I need to take remedial classes? Well, I had never studied business. Accounting? What the heck is that? 1 plus 1. Oh, there's like two sides of that. Okay. And, you know, who had ever studied, you know, different types of things? So I had to take these remedial classes before they actually let me in. That was mortifying to me. But anyway, so I went in and did this MBA, and then what's the next slide? Okay, so 3 years later, I popped out again. It's those same people, I just keep traveling with them. I don't know. Okay, so then what do you think from there? So here I am now, I'm full of myself as an MBA student, I've got my degree, I now know all this technology, and what do I need to do? And then I felt, suddenly in my career, things really began to change. I actually understood more about what the heck was going on at work. Where I had been so focused, so narrowly focused on the technology, on the ones and the zeros and all of that stuff, I began to really figure out, oh, they make something here. Oh, minor detail, right? Oh, we're trying to make money here. Right? This is not my own private science shop, right? And I think sometimes we get lost in that because we're so into technology and what we're doing. We don't see the bigger picture. And so I began to see the bigger picture. And as my perspective changed and broadened, things began to change for me in my career. Okay, that's Lindsay Vonn. That's not me. I tried to find all these people that look like me, and it was really hard. Okay. Anyway, so I began to pick up some speed. Pick up speed in my career, how things were changing. Okay, now go to this job, now go to this job. And I was working in a company at that time, Sun Microsystems. Some of you know Sun. Yay! Oh, I love you. Okay. So I actually worked at Sun for 18 years. It was an awesome time. And yes, I did write it in all the way to the end. That's okay, I got a great change and control package. Okay. You can't forget that part, girls. Okay. All right, so I began to pick up speed with my career and be offered lots of different opportunities. Hey, move to this job, move to this, which threw me into this realm of having to learn different parts of the business all the time, having to learn and meet new people, make more and more relationships, learn about how things operated for that particular division, and then began doing all kinds of things. So moving up and across all these different roles meant that I had to begin integrating this new management experience that I had with the technology experience I already had. So I had to marry those together. And for a lot of people, especially women, sometimes this is seen as a fork in the road again, right? Well, I'm going to go management track, or I'm going to go technology track. Well, now that you've gotten to know me for a few minutes, what do you think I did? Both, right. A chronic overachiever here. You know, I'm not just going to have one or the other. I'm going to have it all, right? I got to have it all. So I began to integrate those together. And that's something that I've stayed with throughout my entire career. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And as I said before, I had to actually learn what the business was all about, what we were doing, why, we want to make money, we want to move up and to the right, we want to know how to work relationships, we want to know how all the widgets work and things like that. So that was a whole new experience because that took me, again, into sort of that remedial realm of having to learn so much about how the company I worked for, how it actually worked, that was, again, another learning experience. There's a theme here, maybe. Are you getting it? Okay, so this is my theme. Is that really along the way, no matter where you are in your career, you can never stop learning. You can never stop learning. the minute you stop learning is the minute, you know, you're going to sort of like, you know, fall away from the pack as they continue to move forward. So these are some things that I thought I'd talk to you about, and, you know, feel free to engage in any dialogue if you want. Along the way, what I also figured out is what I'm really good at. I also had to figure out what I'm not good at. Because I tried. I tried to cover it up, I tried to skate around it, try to stay away from those jobs, but what keeps happening? Keeps showing up, right? So as you become a leader, how do you compensate for that? You hire people around you that do that stuff you're not good at, and you love them to death. You take really good care of them because they're doing something that you're not good at. A lot of times, you know, when we're in the work world, or, you know, even when we were in school, we were looking for accolades and lots of, you know, what I say, people throwing roses at us. Isn't that what they do at the skating rink? You know, she does a beautiful thing and then they throw roses out onto the ice. Well, gee, I'm in business, and what I found was sometimes a few bricks came along with those roses. Whoa, ooh. And I tell you, Juniper, the last couple of weeks, I got a lot of bricks. Whoa, a lot of stuff going on. And then as you're going through all of that, you know, you can choose that those bricks derail you or not. But let's say something really significant does happen in you and you are derailed. What's your standard pattern? How do you get out of things when you're derailed? Do you look to others? Do you blame people? Do you get really scientific and go back down into on the keyboard mode and try to figure out the answer? What you need to know about yourself is how are you going to aid in your own rescue? Because that's actually going to be one of the major determiners of your success. Not that you fail, but that you aid in your own rescue and you get yourself out. And you move yourself forward. That's a very, very profound thing. And one of the things you want to be looking for as you're going through your career is building a whole, you know, that whole persona of credibility. What I call this is your calling card. So when you walk into a job, when you walk into a new assignment, when you interview for a new role, what are you promising them you're going to do? Hi, I'm Leslie Lambert, and this is who I am. So when I hand out that card for me, I know exactly what that is. So for me, credibility here is a combination of execution, accountability, clarity, I'm going to forget, fairness and trust. My calling card that I use is, you can take it to the bank. That means I found along the way that I tend to be more of a truth-sayer than a highly political animal. Okay, what happens to truth-sayers? Right? Oh my God, look at her. But then you have to figure out how to do it right. So what I figured out is that no matter who I worked for or where I was in the situation, people were going to be able to trust whatever I said. I would always speak the truth. I would be authentic, genuine. I would give my point of view, not be rabid about my point of view, but provide my point of view and engage in the discussion. My boss can take it to the bank. When Leslie says something, we know it's true. And I already mentioned this next line here just a second ago, which is, as you're going through things, and you may find some things that are trouble, you know, really staying away from the blame word. Blame is such a bore. Own it. Own it whether it's good or whether it's bad. And I guess what I'm saying here, you know, an uncharted path, is that there is no one path. I showed you my path of in and out of school, going back and forth, quitting jobs, taking jobs, oh my God, going back to the same job, same desk, same pencils, same terminal, same rug, same chair. You know, but how did I learn from each one of those? That's the whole key of what I'm talking about. So for you, it may be a different path. Some people are far more direct. you know, they go to college, they finish in 4 years, they go run off into a career, they begin moving up right away, they become a professor, they become a researcher, they have a glorious career. And me, I was kind of like all over the place. But even if you're all over the place, I'm showing you, you can still be okay. All right, you can do okay. So now I want to talk about the most important lessons that I learned. And this time I hid them. Okay, grab your attention. Okay, so let's see what's the first one here. So one of the things that I can talk to you about is a lot of people say, well, I'm going to do either management or technology. I'm going to do work or I'm going to have a family. Work or a marriage or, you know, different things like that. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, life is a series of and statements. It's management and technology and marriage and children and family and scuba diving. I like to scuba. So it's all kinds of things all at the same time. So if you feel like you're stuck in that or world, let's have a chat, because it's a series of and you got to figure out how to do them all. Okay, what's next? Okay, work the R before the I. This was one of the most painful lessons I ever learned. I was kind of like mid-career as a moving into a senior director role at Sun, and I took a new assignment actually in Massachusetts. So I actually moved here. You know, at Sun, people didn't move to Massachusetts, they moved to California, right? I was like a reverse thing. So I moved out here to Boston. We had a really wonderful division called Sun Express. For some of you that may know Wang Express or Deck Direct or things like that, it was something similar. Quick order desk, direct marketing, you know, phone sales for sysadmins and things like that. Anyway, so I was the CIO of that particular organization. And I came in, I'm from California. Sorry, I also grew up in Los Angeles. Oh my God, Anyway, so I came in and I just like was sort of blasting, right? This is the way we're gonna go. And I bombed. I bombed big time. So what did I learn? And so I'm very, very thankful that the head of HR took me aside one day and said, Leslie, you gotta learn to work the R before the I. Work the relationship before the issue. It's all about relationships. If you are not good at relationship building, make that your number one task when you walk out of here today, is to get yourself some sort of training or familiarization. I don't know, read a book, join a group, get with some friends. Figure out how to do relationship building at work. I came in blazing, guns afire, you know, Yosemite Sam. And I was like firing off issues one after the other. And what happened? People didn't like me. People didn't want to go along with my program. Very, very painful lesson. As you can see, I have never forgotten. Anyway. Okay, what's the next most important lesson? Is that while you're in the work world, it's really tough to get dragged down into those petty conversations, those petty sort of gossiping things about this or about that. And what I'm recommending to you is that you stay on the high road. You stay above the fray. You stay honest, you stay true, you stay authentic. Just stay out of that stuff. I guarantee you this will garner you so much respect in the workplace. It's incredible. This will be a key to your credibility of staying on the high road. And this is actually a quote, so I forgot to put quotes around it. But I went to a conference a number of years ago in Las Vegas, and it was for a particular vendor conference. And I only went to the conference for one reason. I wanted to hear the keynote speaker that was on the last day, okay? And it was a woman, and she was very, very clear, even though she was speaking to a mixed audience of men and women, that she was speaking to the women in the audience. And she was very, very clear that, you know, as a woman, you've really got to know your stuff. better than the men that you're around. You can't get by on like sort of half knowing or half knowing your subject or not being prepared for that meeting or not have done your reading or not have done, you know, prepared your notes for what you're talking about. You've really got to know what you're all about. And that's Dr. Madeleine Albright. I went to that conference just, I know, okay, I did go to all the meetings and stuff, but I was just like, I was riveted. I was going to get like a front row seat to see Madeleine Albright because I thought, oh my God, she is just it. She's the bomb. And she was right. You got to really know your stuff. And you got to know it better than the guys. So if you don't think you're working hard, you got to work hard. And, well, I replaced somebody else's photo, so I thought, well, Malin deserved an upgrade as well. But anyway, so I read this. All right, so there's still just the one man in the room. Anyway, she's somebody that I really, really like. And if you see the quote here, you know, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. So I guess that's also a part of my appeal here, and I think kind of ties into what Nicole and Carolyn were talking about, is that sometimes as technical women, we don't even know each other. We come into the room, we sit by ourselves, because we're the only girl, right? Or we try to be one of the guys, ha ha ha. Okay, well, that just works for like break time, right? Or not even break time. You've got to really get in there, and we've got to work to build those relationships with women as well. Because as they were saying, you know, one of the most powerful forces is actually having a woman join a project team or to actually lead a project team. Lots of statistics prove that women actually achieve more. Project teams achieve more, quicker, more complete, more well-rounded, closed loop, versus just guys just want to get it done, right? Can you all do that with me? Okay, all right. All right, we see the whole, so let's bring that value to the table. Anyway, that's it. So I'd love to take any questions. I'd be glad to talk about, you know, I did have some slides in here talking about all the various roles I've ever had, but I thought that was just too much. So what can I help you with? Yes. Can you go to the microphone so he can get you on the tape?
Sure. How did you make the jump to focusing on security?
Okay. Well, I had told you that I spent a number of years at Sun Microsystems, right? I had started out there actually as leading a very large program across all of engineering. I was a big program management whiz at that time. And I began gaining more and more responsibility. And then some of you who may know about Sun Microsystems Incorporated was a small holding company, only about 100 people. What Sun actually had underneath it was 13 separate companies. Sun and the planets. Okay, that's what we were called. And so I spent a number of years, as I said, switching jobs, being the CIO of different companies within that. So I spent a lot of time in IT. I moved my career into IT. I didn't know what IT was, and that my first adventure into IT was actually when I went to Sun. I'd always been into scientific programming or graphics or something like that. And as I kept going through this career and moving from company to company, that was part of the method to the madness, was getting larger from larger companies, you know, was I found that I was very, very fortunate. And I went through an entire training path of not only being a CIO, but then when the company combined it together all into one Sun, what we put together was a functional organization that had development, architecture, operations, processes, you know, all of that fun stuff. And so I began a tour of duty through those. And I will tell you, after about, you know, 20 to 30 years of doing IT systems, ERP, CRM, ABC, XYZ, I couldn't take it anymore. And so the one thing that I had always dabbled in and I was very fascinated by was security. And so I began to focus my career there. And what I don't talk about on here, though, is how do you think I did that? What's my path? I went back to school. Okay, well, I didn't go to formal school. I went to the other kind of the adult school, right? So I began gathering certifications in areas. So I have several certifications in security. I also have certifications, several of them in privacy and in the management of risk and information systems auditing. So when people see my business card, they say, whoa. I say, yeah, I have no life. I gotta keep up on the CPEs on all of those things, right? But anyway, what I found when I went to security was not only a lot of like-minded people that I really enjoyed, but I found that I am never bored. It is absolutely just so fascinating. I mean, look at what's out there. There isn't a newspaper you open or something you hear on the news, anything, read on the internet. It isn't talking about the latest breach, the latest break-in, the latest hack, the anonymous lulls, what?
LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. Did you all change your password? Okay, well, you better. And you know what? If you use that same password anywhere else, okay, go change it everywhere else, too. Because that's what we tend to do, right? LinkedIn, Facebook, Yahoo, Google. Oh. Okay, so go change it everywhere. So there's all kinds of stuff that you need to take care of. And so I found it was just absolutely fascinating. I also found that it was a really, really good place that because sometimes security is seen as secret agent. Okay. Well, I came into security and I said, this is not a secret agent society. This is more about education, awareness, telling people, what the good news is about things rather than talking about the underbelly all the time, because that can be sort of, that sort of secret guise society of security, right? Notice I didn't wear black today. Okay, that's another joke. People in security tend to always wear black, right?
Paranoid.
They're paranoid. But how do I know I'm not a real security person because I'm not paranoid? Maybe I am, I don't know, yet. But that was my path to security, and that's where I intend to absolutely continue and finish my career in that space. Any other questions? The 6-foot-tall woman with heels, yes.
It sounds like you've made a career out of kind of reinventing yourself.
Yes.
Were you ever scared at any of those points, or how did you sort of talk yourself into it? Because whenever I've considered that, it's an interesting position to be in, so I'm...
Oh, okay. Was I ever scared or any of that stuff? Oh, my God, of course I was. I was freaking out. But I was always like, my father had called me in high school flag-waving righteous. And I'm not quite sure what he meant. Well, okay, I know what he meant. But I was basically just kind of hell-bent on going out there and doing things. I had enough faith and confidence in myself to be able to say, this is going to work. I mean, it's kind of like that Yoda line, right? There is no try, do or do not. And so I would just jump into the existential leap of faith into the void and find my way on the other side. But it does take a lot of courage. And I know you're thinking, okay, it was a beautiful, perfect career, but that's not. Sometimes I talk about my career actually as an accidental career. This accident happened and then I did this, and then the next accident and I went and did that, and then... But what those really were opportunities, right? Things that offered me greater roles and being able to influence more people, make more improvements in certain areas, teach people. I really like to teach. So, yeah, I guess reinventing, but also just taking those chances. Okay, other questions?
Can you talk about... the role of mentoring in your career? Did you find that you had mentors, you sought them out, they sought you out, and just how maybe people did help along the way, because you mentioned Madeleine Albright, women helping other women. I'm just wondering if there is any of that.
Right, and you guys are tagging me on the slides I took out. So I did have the slide on that as well. I have had a tremendous series. It's not one. Can't get yourself connected to one rabbi, right? You got to get connected to lots of different people that have lots of different views on how things work. It's been a combination of men and women, more men than women, because of the industry that we're in, right? A couple of other things that I tremendously benefited from was Sun Microsystems was generous enough to invest in me and send me through two series of executive coaching. So don't discount that. If you can't get your company to pay for it, you might want to look at that yourself. So this is the new and improved. Okay, all right. Thank you. You're my new best friend. Mentors, and the funniest thing, and so this is also just another, I'm into Trivial Pursuit, can you guys tell? I'm an information junkie, I just like take things in, I make numbers out of them all the time. So every mentor I ever had at Sun left the company. Now that's a lesson. Because why? Those people always left and I couldn't go to them anymore. I couldn't go ask them for help. I couldn't say, hey, can you kind of put a word in for me? I had to go do it again. I had to go build another mentor relationship with someone else. And I don't know what it was. Literally, they would leave the company. So, you know, towards the end there, I said to people, I don't know if you want to be my mentor, you know. People leave the company after they work with me. I'm not sure what this is all about. But actually, I went, so let me talk about the types of mentors. People who would tell you the truth. Tell you the truth about how you're being perceived, help you to hold up that mirror to how you're being, you know, viewed in meetings, in contributing to the technology, what your ideas are all about. You know, hey, people, you know, just hear you, blah, 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 but there's no content there. You know, filling up the room with a word cloud. There's no meat in that. Sorry about that. One time I actually, I took on a mentor, a very, very loved man at Sun. He was a senior vice president who actually ran all of our real estate and facilities. Really, he was beautiful. You know, every day he came in, he's the same, you know, he's very, very nicely pressed, and he would walk out at the end of the day very nicely pressed. And I was just like, I can't work with that guy. You know, I guess if I put that picture up of like Pigpen, you know, the that's how I see myself, you know. After 15 minutes, I'm wrinkled, you know, maybe 5 minutes, I'm wrinkled. You know, you go to my office and you're like, oh my God, when was the bomb? You know, when did that go off? That kind of stuff. And so one of the things I thought, oh my God, how am I going to work with this guy? When am I going to learn from him? How to be not wrinkled? You know, anyway, but it was a very profound, actually, mentorship that actually brought me into more public service, which I've never forgotten. And so I do whatever I can to give back. But that was the thing that I learned from him, was actually he challenged me to get out there and to work for some not-for-profits. And today I can say, actually, I'm on the board for two not-for-profits. So that was something. So you never know when you're like, you know, you're told like, oh, okay, this guy's gonna be your mentor. I'm like, oh my God, he's too perfect. It worked out. Other questions? Okay, here she comes. Mother of an 8-year-old.
Yes, mother of an 8-year-old. Gosh, I feel like I'm really short. You seem like you're really a strong woman. You do not apologize.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're not afraid. I like that. I can respect that.
Oh my God, that's on the video.
It is. Thank you.
Okay, it's not okay to be strong, but smell isn't everything.
So, what I want to know is, is that ever a barrier for you? You brought up the example where you had to, HR called you and said, hey, tone it down. Where, just let me tangent for a second, where I work, if a man is really strong and demonstrative, they think he's a strong leader. And if a woman does that, she's sent to charm school. So do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. And I have from the very beginning, and I still feel it today. Absolutely. And so what I don't want that to be sound like is like, oh, my gosh, I should give up. I think what really works is actually being as authentic and genuine, being who you are. And people will see that. There, being in the high technology field, you know, you may be in different areas, it's typically whoever talks the loudest wins. Okay, do you guys know that in meetings? So I can get really loud. I recommend you do too. So some of us as girls have this little voice. Well, can I ask a question? Okay, that's not gonna work. Go work on becoming very strong and very loud, and I am very serious about my point. It's about the presence, it's about the voice, and sometimes you don't even have to be loud. Sometimes you can be extremely powerful if you talk like this. Because what happens? People lean in. But so you have to build that sort of that world of credibility. But
I think confidence is in there too.
Yes.
I think a lot of us struggle with confidence. Even if we're really smart and really good at what we do, we still question, am I really as good as the people in this room? And I don't think that the other people in the room have the same issue. They, even if they're not as good as me, they're really confident about what they think they know.
It's all an act, I'll tell you. So one of the tricks I learned from an early mentor, and this was actually in my early 20s, she taught me, Leslie, you need to just act as if. And I was like, what the heck is that? As if. As if I know everything, as if I'm in charge, as if I'm the smartest person in the room. And yes, there's an important word in that phrase, act. How many of you here are introverts? How many of you are shy? You guys think I'm shy?
Yes.
Extremely. What am I doing right now?
You're surviving.
I'm acting, right? So one of the things, the other tricks I had to learn was how to be a little bit of an actress. Because while I'm at work, while I'm in that role, I have to be that role. I don't have to be that when I'm home or when I'm with my friends. And in fact, I never am. And they're always like, we can't even see you as this like corporate executive. Oh my gosh, you're just like a mess. Remember the pig pen thing? And then I have to always get big and say, yes, of course, I'm very big. But what you have to be able to do is sort of figure out how to act in the moment. Be that role for the moment. Now, for introverts, that can be kind of hard, right? For me, it's very tiring. You know, the extroverts go home at the end of the day after interacting with everybody, and they're energized, and they're ready to, like, go out and, you know, shop. Me, what happens to me at the end of the day when I go home? I got to go in the cave, right? I call it cave time. And so sometimes during the day, you actually have to architect cave time. I'm going for a walk, you know, to sort of re-energize. Because being all this bigness and being that loud in the room, you know, at the beginning will feel very, very foreign. And you'll walk out going like, oh my God, was that me? A little bit of an imposter syndrome going on, but having to figure that out.
And that, I would think, is an essential part of building relationships.
It is,
yeah. How can you build relationships if you're in the cave?
That's right.
And I wondered a little bit about networking.
Yeah.
And the impact that has on all of your careers, being part of the network.
Right. So being a part of a network, that is very, very critical. And it's not just a network and a support system where you are in your current role. It's actually being aware of and connected to other people who are in your same industry. Or, you know, like you can feel comfortable to pick up the phone. And a lot of times it's going to be, you know, a woman, but more times it's going to be a guy. If you're in the technology field, pick up the phone, call the women first, or call the guy first, see what he says, and then call the woman and say, okay, we know how it really goes. But yes, all about networking. You know, and becoming a part of formal networks and informal networks. This conference right here is a chance for an informal, right? You can start beginning relationships, you know, we can close the doors. You have to kick him out. Oh, no, sorry. And then we have a good old hen party. you know, it's really all about, you know, having that list of numbers, even if it's a small number, five or less, of who you can call to help you. Yes?
How can you be authentic if you're acting?
That's a really good question. I guess I'm authentically acting like me. that's a really good question, and I don't know. I don't know. Other than I know that when I began sort of the acting as if, it felt foreign. It didn't feel authentic. But as I became more comfortable with who I am and my own skin and what I look like and what I'm talking about, it sort of became integrated. But at the beginning, it could feel very foreign.
I want to jump in. I think when you say you're acting, you're not acting somebody you're not, other than maybe pushing yourself to be more extroverted.
Right.
You're actually stepping up to who you really are. Instead of apologizing for what you know and what you can do, you're looking around saying, well, everybody else is able to say, I'm good at this and I can do this and I'm confident about this topic and this discussion. You're just saying, okay, I'm going to do the same thing. And the acting part is that you're putting aside the shyness, the quietness, the meekness, the apologetic side of you that's like, well, maybe I don't really know enough. And you're saying, screw that. I know enough. I'm getting in this discussion and I'm going to contribute and they're going to hear what I have to say because I think I have valuable contributions. So the acting part is, you know, overcoming all those fears to say, yep, here I am, I'm a player in this room, not that you're faking it or that you're trying to be somebody or not.
Right. And so let me also teach you a little trick. Okay, so let's say you're in a meeting and there's a technical discussion going on or something, and something you really know something about, like you got to know your stuff, and you feel really passionate about it. When the discussion starts, what do you typically do? You sit back? You wait? I'm going to challenge you. Be first. Go first. Open your mouth first. Command that moment. Don't let those guys get in there, because they will. Command that moment and then lead the discussion. Oh my gosh. For my next trick, okay, that will change your career. Speak first and facilitate and lead the conversation. Suddenly everyone's looking at you. That's very profound. Yes?
Can I ask what you're reading personally in the area of security?
What am I reading personally in the area of security? Okay, so I already confessed I'm an information junkie, so I have gobs and gobs and gobs of books and things that I've learned from, you know, sort of the people in the field. Different things that I'm really focusing on today, though, is given the particular role I'm in today, is actually organization building and getting the right type of folks and technology in place for a place that hasn't been secured before. Yes, when I after I left Sun, I took about 5 months off and I said, I think I better go back to work. So I started looking for a job and scared up a few opportunities. And the one I took was with Juniper Networks. So I won't do a sales pitch, talk about Juniper. But the opportunity that was put in front of me was, wow, you would be the first security person here.
Most people wouldn't want that.
Most people. Okay. Note to self, get head examined. Okay, 2 years into it, I'm ready for that therapy couch, I tell you, woo. So working in Silicon Valley for a high-tech firm that makes networking and security products, we're talking big, heavy-ass routers.
Whoa.
Right? Do you all have cell phones? Do you know why your cell phones work? Juniper Networks. Because all the service providers use our big, gigantic routers to move all that data around. And we want you to consume more and more video, please, so that they'll buy more and more of our routers. When you go to, sometimes in Silicon Valley, you get companies that are still in startup mentality. Over half the company is engineers, very, very science-driven. We're talking propeller heads everywhere. And so they have been managing their own IT, their own security, their own everything for a really long time. And you can imagine what it looks like. You know, it's that bad plumbing diagram. So there are a group of us that have been hired, vice presidents in IT, to shape this place up. So we're in workout mode. Yeah, so trying to put the wheels on the wagon. So my big disaster over the last couple of weeks, I said I've been taking lots of bricks. Oh my God, we lengthened the password on your cell phone. Got people really, really upset. They immediately ripped off corporate email and calendar off their personal phones. How dare you do this? Jackbooted Nazi, security woman, ha. From 4 to 6. Ooh, 4 to 6 numbers. Okay, all right. So you have to always know where you're at. So so I'm not reading a whole lot of scientific stuff, but I am definitely studying in the area of advanced persistent threat and all of that fun stuff. Yeah. Anything else?
I'm also working for a company in Silicon Valley, Taos, and Rick says hello.
Yes, I know. See, I know her. I just wasn't letting on to the whole audience that there was somebody in the room that I actually know.
So I'm curious, women in advanced computing in Boston versus women in advanced computing in California, if there's a harder road for one or the other, or if maybe in Silicon Valley it might be easier to get to a CISO or CIO level. I seem to be seeing that much more in California than I've seen it in Boston.
And I could testify to that. So, pardon me if this is a little bit of a long answer here, but remember I told you I moved to Massachusetts? I forgot to tell you that I moved back to California. But you probably figured that out, right? So, and it wasn't because I blew it at that job. It was because our division, our company, was actually acquired by another company inside Sun. So all of us executives lost our jobs, and so we had to find other ones. So I was then pulled in to be the CIO for the microelectronics division, chips, boards, and modules. Yeah. You can see I like that tough stuff. I'm not into the fluffo. But during that time that I moved back to California, I want to be very, very clear. I moved back to California. My family had moved here. We had bought a house. We were living in lovely Andover, Massachusetts. My partner had a great career going and is one of the lead of a children's clinical program at the largest mental health program in southern New Hampshire. And I had a problem with my job. So I moved back to California. But while I was there in my new job at Microelectronics, I traveled back here just about every weekend, and I also arranged myself to interview for several jobs. I never got any of them. So what I was wondering was, okay, here I was inside of Sun Microsystems as a woman, and at that time, you could count the number of women vice presidents at Sun. This is back in the late 90s, probably on one hand. Okay, so it was kind of a rough road for women as well. And here I was able to demonstrate abilities and move up within the organization. The organization had a lot of trust in me, had a lot of faith in me, and so put me in a leadership role. And actually, the division that I came to work for out here was headed by a woman. A local woman you probably know, Dorothy Terrell. If you don't know her, you need to look her up. She's a fabulous individual. But then what I found when I went back to California, and I still wanted to attain that same level of a position here in the Massachusetts area, I couldn't get it. They looked at me and they said, "You're way too young. You're a girl. You can't have this experience." And so what I found I was running into was a lot of more cultural differences here that I hadn't yet paid my dues. My hair was not white at that time. And so while I went on 4 or 5 major interviews and made it down to the wire on a couple of them, you know, to be like number 2, I never got the job. And that was when the rest of the family decided, okay, we're going to have to go back to California. So I would agree, there might be some tough stuff here, additionally, that's more culturally bound than there is in California. Okay, let's end on a really up note. That was kind of a... We are the world. Oh.
Maybe a last
question? Sure.
What are your next steps?
My next steps? Well, let's see. Fly to Los Angeles tonight and go to 2 graduations in the next 2 days. My nephews. One's graduating from 8th grade, 1 from high school. But seriously, on the job front, keep hanging in there because I know I can make a difference. I'm in a rough place, you know, like I should have had my head examined. Why did I take this job? You know, it's really tough to help people / men change when they don't want to. As you can imagine, in my business where I am at Juniper, it's predominantly men. So it's folks that have had their own way for a really long time. So that's how I'm going to spend my time, is continuing to make the improvements that I know I can, and just keep going from there. All right. Thanks, everyone. You've been very attentive. Enjoy the rest of your day.